The matter of Constructural Dynamics versus Arch Insurance Company. Could we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Your Honors. Jonathan Cass from Cohen, Seglius, Palace, Greenhall, and Furman on behalf of the appellant.
Good morning, Jeffrey Quinn on behalf of Arch Insurance Company.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome. Mr. Cass, please go ahead.
Pleased that we're all here in person. I was watching yesterday, and I saw that the snow led to a virtual appearance. So it's nice after COVID to actually be in front of justices in person for a change. This appeal is, in my mind, very straightforward. It has to do with whether the appellate division properly determined that two exclusions in a commercial automobile policy issued by the appellee Arch Insurance Company, specifically the handling of property and the completed operations exclusions, apply and should be enforced as to deny coverage for a judgment attained by Sylvie against MJF in an underlying matter. In doing so, the appellate division reversed a motion for summary judgment that had been granted by the trial court in favor of Sylvie and against Arch in the amount of approximately $930,000, which was the judgment that had been entered in the underlying matter. Sylvie submits that the appellate division committed reversible error in determining that the exclusions apply, that they should apply and should be enforced, because in doing so, it created a major coverage gap for companies like MJF, which reasonably expect coverage based upon the factual circumstances that occurred in the underlying case, and improperly interpreted New Jersey complete operations doctrine, which applies to statutorily mandated coverage and may not be modified by exclusions, which is exactly what the appellate division did by enforcing these two exclusions. Would the court like me to provide a very brief factual background, and I will make it brief?
It's not necessary. You can if you want to use your time in that way, but we're familiar with the facts.
Okay. I'm going to skip it then. Before explaining to the court why I think the appellate division committed reversible error when it enforced those two exclusions, I want to discuss the statutory scheme that would, the insurance scheme that would govern a company like MJF, because I think it's important for the court to understand how the coverages apply and why the coverage is really only available for what happened under the auto policy. There are four main policies that MJF would get. It would purchase a commercial general liability policy, and in this case, it purchased from Covington Specialty Insurance Company, which was originally a party to this action, but has been dismissed. It would purchase a commercial auto policy because it's a trucking company and has vehicles, like MJF purchased from Arch. And it would also purchase a cargo policy and a workers' compensation and employer's liability policy. So four main policies. Of course, they might have an EPLI policy, D&O policy, but for the purposes of this discussion, let's stick with these four. The commercial general liability policy, or the CGL policy, provides coverage for bodily injury and property damage claims arising from the company's operations, subject, of course, to certain exclusions. For example, if a member of the public slips and falls at the company's facility and sustains injuries, the CGL policy would provide coverage for the resulting claim. However, due to an automobile exclusion contained in the CGL policy, it will not provide coverage for bodily injury or property damage arising from an accident involving an auto. Coverage for bodily injury and property damage claims from accidents involving the company vehicles, what we have here, provided by the company's automobile liability policy. And since the trucking company will be transporting the property of others, it obtains a cargo policy, which provides coverage in the event that the cargo it's hauling is damaged, and the owner of that cargo asserts a claim. For example, if the company's hauling a truckload of televisions, televisions are destroyed when the truck runs off the road and overturns, the cargo policy is going to be the policy that responds. So it's intended to cover property, but it really is a liability policy. Finally, we have the workers' compensation and employer's liability policy, which provides statutory mandated coverage for employee-related injuries and some other coverage under the employer's liability policy. Now, the important thing here is that each of these policies is written to provide coverage for a specific type of risk and to exclude other types of risks. So, for example, the commercial general liability is bodily injury and property damage arising from your operations. But, hey, we're not a workers' compensation policy. We don't provide coverage for that. We're not an auto policy. We don't provide coverage for that. We're not a pollution policy. We don't provide coverage for that. Same thing with auto. Autos, we provide coverage if an accident that arises from the use of an auto or the maintenance of an auto, but we're not your general liability policy. For that, you go to your general liability policy. Similarly, workers' comp. So what, yes, Your Honor?
Counsel, can we try to come to the heart of the issue that we have in this case? I'm going to take you to the facts.
Yeah, okay, sure.
You have a trucking company that was responsible for delivering aggregate.
Mm-hmm.
It was contaminated during the delivery. And later, the construction of the floor at the warehouse turned into a disaster that you seek recovery for.
Correct.
Why is this case, and you've argued that the appellate division ignored Appelman's rule.
Yeah.
When did you first raise that?
We first raised that in our petition for certification. And Your Honor, in going back and looking at Appelman's rule, I actually think that there are other better arguments that I'd like to discuss with Your Honor, with Your Honors about.
Why don't we talk about Appelman's rule?
Okay.
Tell us why you should prevail under that rule.
Well, I think Appelman's rule, the concept of Appelman's rule is that it really has to do with the concept of concurrent cause. And in the court in the which we cited to the Flanderfelt case, essentially said Appelman's rule pursuant to which the loss is covered if a covered cause starts or ends the sequence of events leading to the loss. And I think it's relevant to this situation because what we have here is we have a situation in which there's no dispute that the negligence that triggered coverage under the policy took place during the use of the vehicle. This was a situation in which the trucking company, MJF, failed to clean out their truck, which was maintenance, which was covered under the policy, dumped aggregate into it, and contaminated that aggregate. Once they contaminated that aggregate, which was almost immediately included as a material in a concrete mix that was then poured at the Amazon warehouse that in a floor, that concrete immediately became out of spec and defective. So the concept of why I think that Appelman's rule applies here is the idea that once you have a loss that is covered under the policy, and you have damages that are inevitable because of that, that it naturally flows that the damages that result subsequently are covered under the policy.
But doesn't Appelman's rule only apply to an insurer's initial duty to defend? Has there been any case that has ever applied Appelman's rule to void an exclusion?
I'm not aware of it, but what we were really citing it for is the concept of looking at Appelman's rule and how it applies to how we need to look at the damages that were sustained in this case. And if I could, Your Honor.
In terms of the damages, what is the property that was damaged in this case? Is it the warehouse floor or is it the aggregate that gets contaminated by the salt?
It is the aggregate that gets contaminated by the salt that then is incorporated into the concrete itself.
But it seems like if you say that it's the aggregate that is contaminated by the salt, then you run into the care, custody, and control exclusion because the aggregate was controlled by MJF when it was contaminated by the salt.
Well, that issue, Your Honor, respectfully, is not before the court. The only thing that was appealed was whether the handling of property exclusion and the care, custody, and control exclusion applies. I do understand your point about that, but what I want to focus on here, if I could, is those latter two exclusions.
Because it seems like you're trying to have it both ways. It seems like for the latter exclusions, you're trying to argue that the property that was damaged was the aggregate that was mixed with the salt in the vehicle, so that the completed operations exclusion wouldn't apply because it was while it was in the vehicle, and the handling of property exclusion wouldn't apply because it was while MJF was handling the property. But then it seems like you run directly into the care, custody, and control exclusion, and I understand you're saying that you don't want that to apply because the appellate division held that it didn't apply, but I don't see how one can understand the appellate division's decision without it seeming like there's two different properties that were damaged depending on which exclusion you're applying. It seems like the appellate division was holding that for certain exclusions that it was the warehouse that was damaged, and for other exclusions it was the aggregate that was damaged. And I think you run into that in order to fit yourself in none of the three exclusions. So that's why I don't think you can ignore the first exclusion when you're talking about what is the property that was damaged. If it's the aggregate, how does you then not run straight into the care, custody, and control exclusion?
Well, it's always been our position that the damages that we sustained are not the damage to the aggregate itself.
It was the damage to the floor.
And if
someone had realized that this aggregate was contaminated before it was ever used for installation, there would have been no damage, correct?
If it had not been incorporated into the concrete because somebody realized there was salt, absolutely.
There would have been no damage.
Right. But so I want to give the court a scenario here that applies to the care custody. I'm sorry, applies to the completed operations and the handling of property, because I think it's important to understand the concept of these damages. Let's say we have a trucking company that gets involved in a motor vehicle accident, rear ends somebody. Driver gets out, goes to the individual that he hit, says, "Do we have any problems here? Are you hurt?" And the person says, "No, I feel fine. I'm okay. No problems." They exchange information. He's on his way, and he completes his operations or his load for that day. He delivers it, goes back. So he has completed under completed operations his load for the day. 3 weeks after, that individual is hurt. They wake up and they realize they have back pain. They go to the doctor, they get diagnosed with a disc, and the doctor concludes that the accident was causally related. The mechanism, the negligence that occurred, took place during the operation. That was the rear-ending of the vehicle. Just like here, the negligence that caused liability for MJF rose out of the vehicle, their failure to properly maintain.
But not solely. The distinction between your hypothetical in this case is that in your hypothetical, the only causative factor in the ultimate injury diagnosed weeks later is the accident. That was your hypothetical. In this case, at least two things happened. One, the aggregate was contaminated. And two, later, after the delivery, people were presumably on the scene and did not and installed defective aggregate onto that floor, which ultimately was significantly damaged and had to be replaced. So you have a second stage of causative factors here that is not in your hypothetical, respectfully.
I respectfully disagree, because once the aggregate is contaminated, the any concrete that it is used, it becomes a defective product.
Understood.
Right?
Understood. But if someone had said, I want to take a careful look at this aggregate,
okay,
and said, there's something off here. This is tested it, whatever the mechanism might be. And that is put back on the truck and sent back to its point of origin. There would have been no damage, and that's unlike your car accident scenario because the damage is done at the moment of that accident.
Well, let me provide another scenario for you that I think is helpful here. Trucking company is delivering a load of batteries. And the batteries, while they're forklifting the batteries onto it, and the driver is, while it's in the truck, mistakenly and unknowingly punctures the battery with the forklift. Batteries get delivered to the destination, and they get put in a warehouse. 2 weeks later, there's a fire, burns the warehouse down, and they determine that the cause of the fire is the batteries that were damaged in shipment, occurred during the shipment of the goods. I think that's extremely analogous to our situation because, as you said, well, you could still have inspected those batteries and make sure that they were not that there was nothing wrong with them before you put them in. I don't think that it's necessary, or it actually creates a issue not to do that because you reasonably expect when you've hired somebody to deliver your aggregate or deliver you batteries that they're not going to damage it. And
that's an issue that at a trial, I'm not sure where you're going with this, because at a trial that would be presumably part of the mix that a fact finder would sort out as to what causative factors, and there may be multiple causative factors.
And in that trial, the underlying case, you sued the sub, the GC. Did you sue the sub and the GC?
No. So Sylvie only brought an action against MJF because MJF was the entity that had contaminated the aggregate.
Well, that brings me to interpreting, handling the property and the chief's original question about Appleman. Why isn't the plain language of the exclusion determinative?
Well,
let me just phrase it this way. The exclusion says that insurance does not apply to property damage resulting from the handling of property before it is moved and after it is moved. Here, the damage to the property was to the aggregate during the move. Why then does the exclusion apply just based on the plain language of the exclusion?
Because what this exclusion is intended to do is to... It's the handling of property that occurred before, because they don't want to provide coverage for actions that take place that are unrelated to the vehicle.
And that didn't happen here.
That didn't happen
right
here. And they don't want to do it afterwards. And, you know, one of the things I'm sure Your Honor saw was that the appellate division cited to the case of Barry Concrete. And it actually ended up saying, well, you know, when it did its care, custody, and control analysis, it cited as an exception and then made included the case in a footnote in which it said, oh, by the way, although it ended up reversing itself on a motion for reconsideration, it never really didn't reverse itself on the care, custody, control. I'm sorry, it didn't reverse itself or address its decision on the handling of property or on the completed operations. And I think that case is very instructive because they did address this. And let me just read from it. And the Barry case was literally factually almost identical to this. Concrete company gets a load of aggregate. It gets contaminated with sugar, not salt. It gets mixed into the concrete. It gets poured, and the foundation and slab don't harden because it has this contaminant in it. They then have to go out and rip out the slab and the foundation and re-pour it to the tune of about $300,000+. So factually, completely identical. And the carrier in that case raised a number of exclusions, including the care, custody, control, the handling of property, and the completed operations. And this is what the court said with regard to handling a property.
You're talking about the initial decision or the motion for reconsideration?
The initial decision, not the motion for reconsideration. And as the court determined in its motion for reconsideration, remember, here, all you really need to do is find that one exclusion applies and then the other exclusions. It doesn't really matter what your determination is. So what the court determined in its motion for reconsideration was that there's a law in Louisiana that allows carrier to exclude consequential damages. The court determined that it applied and said, we're going to reverse our motion, our decision. However, I think that the rationale that the court used in that decision for finding that both of the exclusions that we're faced with here didn't apply are important. It said, the plain language of the policy excludes coverage for handling the property before it is loaded or after it is unloaded. Exclusive for the handling of property. We do not have the mechanism of negligence here doesn't involve the handling of property before or the handling of property afterwards.
That's my point.
Right. So that's why the exclusion doesn't apply.
Exactly my question.
Yeah.
So we don't even have to get into Appleman.
I'm sorry. I agree that was part of my when we started out. I think that the Berry analysis is a better analysis than the
But here's what you run into with the Berry analysis. So the court originally held that the handling of property and the completed operations, as you said, didn't apply, and that neither did the care, custody, and control. But then they reversed themselves on the care, custody, and control because they find that the exclusion does apply if the damage, and the damage was clearly excluded under the provision because the damage to the aggregate happened, quote, while being transported by the insured. That's what you run into here. If you are saying that the property that was damaged is the aggregate and that it was damaged by salt when it was in MJF's truck, then you run directly into the care, custody, and control exclusion because it was clearly within the care, custody of control and control of MJF when it was in their truck and damaged by the salt. The reason that it's different from your first hypothetical that you gave, which was someone's driving a truck, if I'm remembering this correctly, someone's driving a truck, crashes into another car, the person doesn't realize that their back was injured until 3 weeks later. So there you have no problem with the handling of property or the completed operations because the person was injured at the time that the truck crashed into them. And you also don't have any problem with the care, custody, and control exclusion because the person's back was not in the care, custody, or control of the truck at the time. Instead, the truck driver was driving his truck. He crashed into another vehicle and he caused damage. Here in your case, you're saying that the truck itself damaged property in its own truck by mixing the aggregate with the salt because they left the salt in the truck and then they mix the aggregate in. While it's in their own truck, it gets injured. That runs straight into the care, custody, and control exclusion because the aggregate was in the care, custody, and control of MJF at the time you allege it was damaged.
So, respectfully, the reason the care, custody, and control exclusion is contained in the policy is because they do not want a liability policy to turn into a cargo policy. Okay? And this gets back to my point about why we have different coverages that apply to different parts of the operation of the company. Why we have argued, and I think properly, that we're not seeking damages because the aggregate got contaminated with salt. We're not saying, give us that load of aggregate costs $300. We want a clean $300 worth of aggregate. We're saying that the contamination of that aggregate created consequent damages that resulted from that. Now, the issue...
And you run into the fact that if you're saying that it was the warehouse floor that was damaged, then that happened long after the aggregate was damaged. You're trying to have it both ways.
We get right back. But the point of the care, custody, control is not to convert the policy into a property policy that provides coverage for the cargo that's being hauled.
Let me just ask you this hypothetical. In your underlying case, let's make believe that you sought damages only for the aggregate. not for the cost of removing or replacing the floor. Under the care, custody, and control exclusion, there would be no coverage because you had care, custody, or control of the aggregate during the time it was transported from point A to point B with the salt, right?
Agreed.
So in the underlying case, your damages weren't allocated. We want $950,000, $300,000 for the aggregate, $400,000 for the removal of the floor, and the rest is for whatever. It was just for the removal of the floor.
Removal and replacement.
Right. So the trial judge and the APTIV both said care, custody, and control, when you sought that type of damage, was inapplicable.
Right. And I want to get to what the Barry court said about the completed operations.
Can I step back a second? I'm not asking whether you're abandoning your Appelman's theory, but you seem to be departing from it or going to a different theory.
I believe that the Appelman's theory in terms of that a cause that happens during the a covered cause of loss is covered no matter, well, yeah, I think you're on.
No, I know your theory.
Yeah.
It was raised for the first time before us in the petition.
It is not something that I'm pressing before this court at this time.
Okay, that helps.
I want to talk about the Barry court and its decision on the completed operations. It says, and this is a quote, "This exclusion is typically applied in construction cases to preclude coverage for claims against a contractor or subcontractor, and neither party has cited cases applying the exclusion in an auto policy. However, even without case law, genuine issues of material fact remain with respect to when the property damage occurred and when Wilson Trucking had completed its job. Based on the allocations in the complaint and Western World's own understanding of the allegations," Western World was the auto carrier, "the alleged commingling of the sugar in the aggregate occurred while Wilson Trucking was still transporting the aggregate. Clearly, this was before Wilson Trucking had completed its contractual obligations of delivering the aggregate. Therefore, the completed operations exclusion is equally inapplicable." And that is what the appellate division should have decided. And it should have, it was interesting. It did a nice job in terms of pointing out the applicability of New Jersey's complete operations doctrine, which was the case that was discussed, and I'm going to butcher this name. I think it's Panaccia versus Turner Construction. I'm going to call it the Turner Construction case. And in the Turner Construction Court, the court explained, quoting and citing to another appellate division case, Senno, that loading and unloading insurance even covers the entire process involved in the movement of goods from the moment they are given into the named insured's possession until they are turned over at a place of destination to the party to whom the delivery is made. And the appellate division cited to this court's decision in Kennedy versus Jefferson Smurfitco for the proposition that the concept that the use of vehicle includes the act of loading and unloading the vehicle is well settled. However, the court missed a crucial point in Kennedy, namely that the New Jersey legislature has mandated omnibus coverage for, quote, "loss resulting from liability imposed by law for bodily injury, death, and property damage sustained by any person arising out of the ownership, maintenance, operation, or use of an automobile." And it cited two different New Jersey statutes, the No Fault Act, as well as 39:6b-1.
That's only personal injury.
Well, it is bodily injury, death, and property damage. Okay.
Does that go beyond damage to the vehicle?
I believe it does.
Is there any law on that?
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor. When I read that statute, I interpreted that to mean the
I would think that if I certainly haven't looked into that issue, okay, but property damage, as I've seen it over the years in these no-fault cases, is the dent in the car, the total car.
The no-fault actually wouldn't apply here because it's not a personal motor vehicle. It would be 39:6b-1 that would apply.
Is this a new theory today?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily a new theory. It's an expanded argument based upon what the appellate. I wanted to respond to what the appellate division did in their decision. And remember the.
So let me just get. Yeah. So you're contending that that property damage would include contamination of cargo.
It includes any property damage that arises from the use of the vehicle.
And here again, you know, obviously there are many, many cases where that's been applied because it's such a common scenario.
Right.
Has anybody ever tried to extend that to cargo?
Well, we're not asking for damage. We're not asking.
I understand that, but what you're asking for is damage to something that happened after unloading the aggregate because of contamination of the aggregate. And I'm just unfamiliar with cases in which that concept has been extended to even damage to cargo, let alone damage to property that follows.
I don't think it would be extended to cargo for the reasons we talked, in which the policy doesn't provide coverage for cargo. The property damage would be property damage to a third party that arises from the.
But again, do you have any?
You're saying this wouldn't cover the damage to the aggregate itself, but it does cover something that damage subsequently caused?
Yes.
What kind of insurance policy doesn't cover a specific property damage, but then covers other damage that might be caused by that property damage?
A commercial auto policy under New Jersey law is what I would submit to you as the answer.
But you don't have any case to give that as an example, right?
This is, and I think counsel and myself and even the appellate division, when they were, there is really no case law that's directly on point. The only case that we could find was the Turner case that deals with completed operations coverage, right? And that case is just completely distinguishable from this one because the mechanism of injury in that case, which was the strap that ended up tripping somebody, that didn't happen until after the vehicle had dropped off the load and the vehicle had left.
Is your adversary had an opportunity to respond on this issue?
I'm sorry?
Is your adversary hearing this theory for the first time this morning?
This is the court standard here is de novo, as we know.
That doesn't mean that lawyers who have litigated a case in three levels of two appeals and arrive here for oral argument after briefing is completed should be hearing arguments for the first time.
Well, I understand, but it really rose out of the court's analysis of the completed operation doctrine and how that is applied in New Jersey law. And they were correct in how they interpreted it, but what they weren't incorrect is looking at the statutory mandated coverage and how this exclusion should be interpreted based upon that mandated coverage that's under the statute. There's a case, Parkway Iron and Metal, where the court refused to enforce an exclusion. That's an appellate division case from coverage for bodily injury and property damage resulting from the movement of property by a mechanical device other than a hand truck, not attached to a covered auto. And it determined that was contrary to public policy. So I think the important concept here with regard to those two exclusions is that I think the Barry Conker, the federal court in Louisiana in Barry Concrete interpreted those two exclusions, handling a property and completed operations appropriately based upon a plain meaning of the law and a plain meaning of those provisions. I think a secondary way to look at this is that you also have to interpret those exclusions in a matter of public policy, which was one of the reasons we came before this court. And we said we think that this creates a gap in coverage. Because if you allow a carrier to interpret those two exclusions the way they have and the way the appellate division has permitted the carrier to interpret them, we're going to be in a situation where you can have a act of negligence involving a motor vehicle that creates damage and there's no dispute that it created damages, that's not covered under that auto policy.
That insurance law is contract law, right? Parties can contract to have all possible risks covered, or they can contract to have something less than all possible risks covered, right?
As long as it meets the statutorily required coverage under the state, yes.
So is your whole argument now premised as to whether or not the big picture of the of this insured's coverage does or does not meet the statute?
No. I think a plain meaning, a plain reading of those provisions, as was done by the court in Berry Concrete, indicates that those two exclusions do not apply here. That is what the Berry Concrete Court concluded. Because the handling of property that led to the damages occurred during the operation of the vehicle, not before or not after. And the key here is that once that aggregate was contaminated, the aggregate immediately put concrete out of specification and made it defective.
That's why I asked in the underlying case, who you sued? Design professionals, the GC, the owner, the subcontractor report, or as Justice Patterson pointed out, there could have been a lot of mitigation of damage in that case if there had been an allocation of responsibility.
But the allocation of, unfortunately for my client, Sylvie, we're a signee of MJF, we were the ones who made the defective concrete. We were the ones who incorporated the contaminated aggregate. And
you didn't pour it.
Right. But once you mix the aggregate into the concrete, you're not going to know that it has been contaminated with salt until sometime after it hardens and then it erodes the rebar. And it was the rust staining that put Amazon on notice of that. So that's the issue. You know, you always want to try to spread the blame, but this really fell solely on Sylvie's shoulders. And there's also, as we know, sometimes you have a good client and you screwed up and you raise your hand and you say it's my fault. I'm going to take care of it. And that's what Sylvie did. And now what's happened is that notwithstanding MJF's efforts to obtain coverage that would protect its operations, the auto carrier said, we're not going to provide coverage for this.
A cargo operations policy or a general liability policy. This is specifically an auto insurance policy, correct?
Right. The GL policy has an auto exclusion, which it has a rising out of language, and it's been interpreted by this court very, very broadly, which is why Covington, the GL carrier, CGL carrier, is no longer a party.
So you're no longer relying on Appleman's rule. You're no longer relying on Appleman's rule, which was briefed before us. You're now relying on the omnibus auto liability statute, which has a provision in it that covers property, requires the property damage be covered, which has not been argued below or briefed before us. Am I right?
Your Honor, I'm arguing it as an alternative. What I'm arguing is that—
Alternative to what?
Well, there's two ways to look at the handling of property and completed operations. You can rely on the plain meaning of the statute as interpreted by Berry Concrete, and you can determine that those two exclusions don't apply.
What statute?
I'm sorry?
What statute?
What I'm saying is it's based, Berry Concrete wasn't a statutory interpretation. It was based upon the plain meaning of the language in the policy. And I would say to this court that you can rely on the plain meaning of that language in order to determine that neither exclusion applies.
Like the trial judge did.
Which is exactly what the trial judge did. As an alternative, I would request that the court consider the concept that these exclusions, as interpreted by the appellate division, are contrary to our statutory scheme of mandatory automobile insurance in New Jersey, and that if you decide to disregard the plain meaning of the exclusions, that as a backup you can determine that they don't apply because of the statutory mandated coverage.
And neither of those seem to align with the appellate division's decision. So you're right. So you're saying apart from the appellate division's decision, go back to the trial court?
Yes.
That's what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Other questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add in closing?
No. Any further questions for me? No.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel, Jeffrey Quinn for Arch Insurance Company. 10 years ago, when I was a young man of 55, I wrote the coverage opinion in this case to Sylvan. And here we are 10 years later, and the issue is the same that I confronted when I was first presented with the issue from my client as to whether or not there's coverage. And my good friend, Mr. Cass, is a fabulous lawyer, and he argues vociferously, but it's really very, very simple. And I think from me observing his presentation and the questions, the key to this is very, very simple. We just have to figure out, is the property damage the adulterated aggregate, or is the property damage the resulting flooring? And candidly, I don't care which one it is. My client doesn't care which one it is. Personally, when I wrote the opinion 10 years ago, I thought it was the aggregate. I thought that was the easiest.
What do you mean you wrote the opinion 10 years ago?
I wrote a coverage opinion to my client.
You mean the disclaimer letter?
A coverage opinion letter to the client.
Okay. That's privileged.
On this issue. And it's the same issue now where I sat down and
said. That's privileged.
Yeah.
We're not asking about it.
I understand, but the point being that we're still in the same spot. All we have to do to decide this is to figure out, under this fact pattern, which was the same fact pattern when it was first presented to me, is it the adulterated aggregate or is it the flooring? If it's the adulterated aggregate, the care, custody, and control exclusion applies. It's the same exclusion that's been in commercial auto policies for as long as I've been practicing law. And if it is the flooring, it is the handling of property and the completed operations exclusion. Analytically, they're the same for our fact pattern, meaning that that damage occurred after we dumped the aggregate and left, or after that's managing the property, or after our contract was over, which was to drop the aggregate at Sylvie and leave. So either way, an exclusion applies. Now, what the trial court did was interesting. The trial court said, for purposes of the care, custody, and control exclusion, the property damage is the resulting floor. Thus, MJF never possessed the floor, so that exclusion doesn't apply. And then when addressing the handling of property and the care, custody, and control exclusions, the trial court went backwards and said, well, in that case, the property damage is the adulterated aggregate, which occurred before in our truck before we were finished with our work and before our contract was up. So therefore, neither of the three exclusions applied. The appellate division, in my view, corrected that and said, trial court can't have it both ways. You just have to define what you think the property damage is.
Please go ahead.
Isn't the damage the amount that that Sylvie has sought in this declaratory judgment suit to make it whole of the underlying judgment, which was for the floor, not for the aggregate? And if that's the case, then the exclusions do not apply.
I disagree, Ron.
Well,
they sought monetary damages for the floor, but for purposes of the policy.
But that's why I asked him about that underlying case. There was no allocation of how the damages were arrived. They didn't break out this amount for the aggregate, this amount for the replacement, and this amount for the other aspects of the defective floor. It was for, as I understand it, what they sought damages for, or simply to remove and replace the floor, not for the aggregate.
I understand, John.
So therefore, it does matter.
This is an insurance policy.
You're saying if it's the aggregate, one exclusion applies, and if it's the floor, it's the other two.
Exactly.
So, and I think we heard from your adversary that he's going with the floor theory.
Right.
Entirely. So we can forget anything that would apply to the aggregate.
I think this is a de novo review, Your Honor. And I think if this court, the highest court in the state, says we think it's the aggregate, that's fine with me as well, because I think analytically it's probably the cleanest way to look at
it. Tell us why. Finish that thought.
No mental gymnastics needed, Your Honor. The MJF truck pulls up, the clean aggregate goes in, MJF truck shows up at Sylvie and drops it off, the aggregate is adulterated. It's aggregate is property, it's personal property, it could be air conditioners, it could be aggregate, it could be whatever. And so we got the aggregate clean, they dropped off, this is the insured, they dropped off the aggregate adulterated, damage to property during the, when clearly MJF had sole care, custody, and control of that aggregate, end of story. I like that best, just from a, if this were a law school class, I think that's the cleanest analysis. But if the court doesn't like that,
It's not a question of liking it or not liking it. I think we've had some discussion today that has narrowed, at least the theory they appear to be going with exclusively now, is it's the floor.
Because the appellate division said it's the floor, right?
Well, I'm not sure why, but that's what your adversary is telling us is he's not going with Appelman's, he's going with the exclusions that he says don't apply to the floor as damage. So we should address that.
Just from my perspective, though, I have three exclusions and I haven't given up any of those.
No, I understand.
In the court's de novo review, if you say, I think there's too much mental gymnastics to get it to be the floor, and this is a very simple pick up clean aggregate, drop off adulterated aggregate, care, custody, and control of the aggregate when it's damaged, end of story, I think that works as well. But back to Your Honor's question.
Quick question about it. You said you haven't given up any of the three. The trial judge concluded care, custody, or control did not apply.
Well, he said all three did not.
I understand, but I'm talking about that one right now.
Right.
And on that one, did you cross appeal?
To the appellate division, yes. I appealed that whole decision, Your Honor, because I lost. I lost all three exclusions at the trial court level.
And
so that went up.
Did you cross petition on that too? Was the Aptiv agreed with the trial judge on the care custody?
I appealed.
So the only two questions that we have are the handling the property and the completed operations exclusions.
That was Sylvie's appeal from the appellate division.
Right, and you didn't cross petition.
I did not.
Okay. But would you have needed to cross petition because it was just a judgment saying that the case was over for a particular reason? You agreed that the case should be over. So would a cross petition have been required? You weren't trying to enlarge the judgment in any way. You weren't trying to change the judgment in any way. You're just making an alternative argument to support that judgment.
Correct, Your Honor. And I was happy with the appellate division because, as the court knows, I only need one exclusion to apply. And the case is over for my client. We prevail. So
I assume your argument on the plain language of the handling of property is that if you see the damage as the floor, then that damage occurred, quote, after it is moved from the covered auto to the place where it is finally delivered by the insurer, because the damage to the floor happened long after the MJF truck was done and left.
Yes, Your Honor. Exactly. So I look at this as, and again, my friend, Mr. Cass, who is my friend and he's a fantastic lawyer, and we've fought this case for ever, it seems like, started out by saying it's a very simple case and then went off on some arguments that candidly I couldn't really follow and I don't think are really before this court. I think this is a very straightforward and simple case, and I think the court just has to define what it believes is the property damage pursuant to the policy. And if you say it's the aggregate, care, custody, and control applies, case over, no coverage. If it is the flooring that occurs months later, that's clearly after our work was done and after the contract was over, so the handling of property and the care, custody, and control exclusion applies as the appellate division applied, case over.
Your adversary, I think, seems to be arguing that it could have been a floor but the cause of it was from the aggregate. So it's kind of a mix between the aggregate and the floor. And, you know, you heard the hypothetical about the person who didn't know that their back injury happened until later. Can you think, are you aware of a case where there couldn't be coverage for the actual property that was damaged in the form of the aggregate, but there could be coverage for something that that subsequently causes damage to later down the road?
I totally understand your question, Your Honor. I do not know of one. I do not.
And while we're asking about whether you know of cases, you heard the argument, which you indicated was new to you, about the omnibus auto liability statute mandating coverage for this particular damage. Are you aware, and I know I'm hitting you with a left field question because it is new to you, are you aware of any extension of that statute to a situation where the allegation is that cargo, the auto policy has to apply because cargo was adulterated during transport and then later caused damage in a different location?
Not at all, Your Honor. And I am familiar somewhat with the statute, and my impression always was that the property damage that was referred to therein was property damage to the vehicle. That argument, as I heard it for the first time today, would seem to be that that statute eviscerates commercial automobile policies because it essentially eliminates any exclusions that are in these policies. This, by the way, is an ISO policy. The policy in question, again, these are exclusions that have been litigated and looked at all across the country. We do not have a lot of case law in New Jersey on these, but when you get down to it, it's an exceedingly similar or exceedingly simple analysis. Focus solely on what is the property.
And just to finish this line of questioning, on the plain language of the handling of the property exclusion.
Yes, sir.
It does not expressly address a situation where there's damage during the delivery to property, but then that damaged property later damages other property, correct?
It does not. Yeah, you are correct that it does not say
and
that.
The same thing applies to the completed operations exclusion. It does not expressly address this fact pattern, namely damage to property during transit, aggregate being exposed to salt, and then that damaged aggregate later damages something else. The completed operations plain language exclusion does not specifically and expressly address that either, correct?
Correct, Your Honor, but I would ask this question rhetorically because I don't get to ask questions of the court, is that then, you know, the policy defines property damage.
Right.
So under that fact pattern, rhetorically, what would be the property damage?
Well, wouldn't that be a question for the underwriting department?
I think, Your Honor, that what that does is a lot of mental gymnastics to get past what are plain language and unambiguous exclusions that have been in, you know, commercial auto policies for, again, I've only been doing this for 40 years, but however long I've been at this, that's been the case.
Couldn't you also argue that the plain language of the completed operations does specifically address this? Because it specifically says this insurance does not apply to any of the following, dot, dot, dot. Property damage arising out of your work after that work has been completed or abandoned. So you could say once your work, meaning the delivery of the contaminated aggregate, is completed or abandoned, anything that happens after that is specifically excluded because that's what the plain language says. So it actually is addressing what happens if that aggregate causes some other damage in 2 years and 10 years and 15 years, because it specifically says everything is excluded after your work has been completed.
Completely correct, Your Honor. And I think in answering Your Honor's question, it does not explicitly address your explanatory fact pattern. But yes, Your Honor, I think you could certainly read that as saying it's a hard cutoff. Once we're done, either handling a property, meaning we're done and we've left, or completed operations, which just means our contract is over. Yes, I think that that could certainly be interpreted as sort of a bright line. That's that is the cutoff. Subsequent damage is not covered under the policy.
Go ahead, please.
If there's some negligence in the handling of the property leading up to that final moment, and there's no intervening factor, would that still put them on the hook? In the handling. So,
Your Honor, expand on what
I'm trying to figure out when handling is completed, right? Is it when it's placed? Is it when it's delivered? What's the final step?
Yeah, in this case, it's easy, Your Honor, because we know when it started, which is when the aggregate was put in the MJF truck, and we know when it ended, when it got dumped in Sylvie's hoppers. And a hoppers is just a storage bin for aggregate and other things get eventually mixed into cement. So this one's easy.
But doesn't placing it in the hopper make it inevitable that it will be mixed with the other components to make the concrete?
Presumably, Your Honor, yes. I mean, they wouldn't order it if they didn't need it.
But at that point, it's prepared to then be used to make concrete. So there's no chance that there's an intervening event that's going to cut off what will inevitably happen, which is that the concrete will not harden properly or will be damaged as a result of the salt.
I mean, I guess there could be any intervening cause, Your Honor. It could be a strike of lightning and burn down the plant. But I think that the problem with this sort of slippery slope argument is that we have just our classic and plain language exclusions, and there are certainly, Your Honor, mental gymnastics that can be attempted to try to circumvent them. But if you just read the exclusion and you look at the facts, it was either damaged, the property is the aggregate, then it was damaged when we had care, custody, and control and dropped it off, and that exclusion applies and we don't care about the other exclusions, or the court says, no, Jeff, that's not it, it's the eventual floor. That's okay, too. And then clearly under that fact pattern, care, custody, and control would not apply because MJF never possessed or controlled the floor. But then it immediately impacts the handling of property, which, again, is once we leave, we're done. There's your bright line and or the completed operations. So
let me pause here on completed operations because you said something about the contract. If MJF's... this is addressed to MJF, the policy is. It says, the insurance does not apply to any of the following, as Justice Wainwright read to you. Property damage arising out of, quote, your work after that work has been completed or abandoned. Is that about what happened on that delivery on that day, or is that about when the moment of completion being when MJF has done all its work for Sylvie?
The former, Your Honor.
So it's we look at your work. Now, that's a defined term in the policy, right?
It is.
And your work, for purposes of our analysis, your contention is the delivery at the plant. It's unloaded. The truck drives away. Finito. Yes. Done. That's the completion.
Correct, Your Honor, because it is an occurrence policy. So let's say MJF had a 10-year contract to deliver aggregate on some regular basis from wherever they got it to the Sylvie plant. The for purposes of liability insurance, it is the event of that delivery. So that delivery, that contract, that work was pick up the aggregate for that delivery, make that delivery, and off you go.
So just the last question.
Hey, you said that last time.
No. Let's use this hypothetical. The aggregate is placed into clean trucks without salt.
Okay.
The aggregate is delivered to Sylvie's concrete plant and delivered. It's done. Your work is done. Before the aggregate is mixed, that is before Sylvie mixes the aggregate to create the concrete for the subcontractor to pour, something happens to the aggregate. It's exposed to salt, let's say, unrelated to the delivery. Under the completed operations exclusion, the insurance company would not the exclusion would apply, and insurance would not cover the damage to the aggregate that happened after the work was complete.
But, Your Honor, the insurance wouldn't imply at all because MGF wasn't negligent in any way. It picked up clean aggregate and dropped off clean aggregate. If it gets adulterated some other time, some other way, it would have nothing to do with the insured and nothing to do with the policy.
Right.
Can I ask one additional question?
Yes.
I think one of the things that troubled me about this case is it seemed like your argument that it doesn't matter, you know, if the property is X, then Y exclusion applies. And if the property is Y, then Z exclusion applies. One of the things that bothered me when I first read it was it seemed like then the policy would never apply. So there could be negligence that MJF was involved in, but the policy would never apply. But then I think your adversary helped me by giving the example of if someone is driving a truck and crashes into another vehicle and that person injures their back, but that back injury is not discovered until 3 weeks later, you agree that would be covered.
Absolutely.
So the only reason that you're arguing that this doesn't, would not be covered is because this specific policy has an exclusion that if what is damaged is in the care, custody, and control of the insurance holder at the time that it is damaged, there is no coverage. Auto insurance generally applies when one car hits another car. If you damage that other car and that other car was not in your care, custody, and control at the time you damage it, then it's covered.
Exactly, Your Honor. And, you know, we do have to get back to that, right? This isn't the, in the main, it's an automobile liability policy to protect other drivers if they damage their vehicles or injure them personally. But the purpose, and we got into some of the purposes of insurance, I'm not sure why, but in any event, if we're going to look at that too, that's the whole reason they have bailment policies and cargo policies and other things. This is an auto insurance policy. So they say, we don't know what you're going to carry. We don't know how you're going to carry it. So we're here to protect the public and yourself on first party coverage for automobile accidents in the main. So Your Honor, you're straight on the nose for that.
A commercial auto policy.
Commercial auto, Your Honor. Right. Yes.
A little different.
One last, if I may, Chief.
Absolutely.
You could have said no, Your Honor.
He could have. He's very kind. What is the definition? I'm not finding it in the either party's appendix. What is the definition of your work?
Oh, yeah, I have it here, Your Honor.
Thank you. And can you give us a citation to the record?
It's in the completed operations exclusion. It's in exclusion number 10.
Thank you.
Of coverage A, section 2.
Okay. My colleague has it.
Work always performed prepared. By you or on your behalf?
Means work or operations performed by you or on your behalf.
You didn't like it when I sent it.
It was terrific, both of you. Both of you did a beautiful job. But how does that tell us that the delivery ends the work? Because that, thank you very much. That's very general language.
I believe Your Honor is going back to your first question, which is, again, I think the key to that, I don't think that definition necessarily answers the question. I think what answers that question is it's an occurrence policy. So it covers occurrences. And so.
So to the extent that MJF didn't do anything further on this disastrous situation involving the warehouse floor, then we should consider MJF's work to be concluded
for purposes
completed for purposes of the policy because it's a single occurrence.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Well, under the completed operations provision, it indicates that your work shall be deemed completed at the earliest of the three different particular circumstances, including when all the work called for in your contract has been completed. So,
yes, ma'am.
Your argument is once it's delivered, that's it.
Other questions, anyone?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement.